Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Forged in the fires of undersoil heating, stronger than the steel of a stadium roof, their name is uttered in anguish and ecstasy.
It's all about the football gods. All they can do is hope they're smiling on them.
Never seen, never heard, but with ultimate power.
Hello, you're listening to Football Gods with me, Tim Spears.
And me, Kate Mason. This week, we're joined by an actor, a young man by the name of Bradley James. You might know him from the series Damien, where he plays the Antichrist. We're hoping you'd bring a few of those vibes to this week's episode of the Football Gods. He's also in the BBC's Merlin, which was a massive hit, but he's also an Arsenal fan and a massive England fan, as we came to hear, Tim. It was really interesting the way he talked about being an England fan.
It was. He also did revel in those Antichrist vibes. It's not a reflection on his personality at all, but some people feel hesitant about damning people or things to hell. But no, not our Bradley.
No.
One of many wonderful avenues that he took us down today, we were talking about American Pie and FIFA and white shorts and Matthew Upson. It just went everywhere, basically. But that's what we like on this show.
Yeah, it's. I think some of the episodes, like, it reminded me a bit of the Anna episode as well, in terms of how we went a bit off on one. And I think
off-piste.
It's a testament to kind of how people experience the game and the kind of characters that we've had on the show. So
it's a wild smorgasbord of personalities and ideas. That's what this is.
And find out if he did choose a smorgasbord for his food of the gods in this week's episode. Here is Bradley James, Football God.
So if we start, Bradley, with your sort of football life, when did it all start for you? When did you fall in love with the game? Which team did you support as a wee lad?
In terms of who I support, my answer is not as simple as it could be, but essentially I'm an England fan first and foremost.
Right.
My passion for if England to win a World Cup far outweighs any club doing anything. And the emotions that I would feel were that to happen, I'd explode, I feel. I'm an England fan first and foremost. I'm also an Arsenal fan. I moved around a lot as a kid. And so there's a whole bunch of clubs that I just, you know, I keep an eye on. I wouldn't say I support, but I have appreciation for a variety of teams, which I don't think is the norm for many football fans. We would go to wherever we could get a ticket, basically. My dad was a football fanatic, and as soon as I could sort of stand up, I was kicking a ball around. We'd go to the Arsenal games, go to Chelsea games. Then we would go the other way. We'd go to Southampton. We'd go and see Bristol Rovers, Swindon Town. We sort of like had this kind of football tour thing going on. The first game that sort of sorted my club allegiance was Chelsea versus Arsenal. And my dad is there, you know, fully hoping to indoctrinate me into being a blue, and I think Arsenal won like 1-0 or something, like the late 80s. It was, I remember nothing about the game, but my dad informs me, but from that moment he knew he'd messed up.
Explain to us what being an England sort of fan involves for you. Do you try and watch every game? Are you like keeping up to date with who's in the squad, and you know, what does being an England fan entail?
I tend to go to a game a year. I look forward to tournaments with an intense passion. I, at an age where I was far too old to do this, I completed the Russia 2018 Panini World Cup sticker book.
Amazing.
To me, in my head, I care about how many goals Harry Kane gets in an England shirt. Like, I wanted him to break the record and then some. I or I remember lineups from, you know, from the past. I remember teams from the past, and just in a way that just doesn't kind of stick in club football. And I think it's because I'm a bit of a cynic, actually. I see club football as businesses playing businesses, masquerading as these kind of like local pride factories, when in the cynic in me can't help but feel like nations at least have some reason for being there outside of capitalism.
It's a really good point. There is still a semblance of purity to international football, and obviously parts of that are eroded away by where World Cups are awarded to, etc. However, anyone who watched AFCON or even the Asian Cup recently will appreciate the raw passion involved in that. And yeah, there is still a part of that with England, I think. I think we see that during major tournaments, and we certainly saw that during the Euros. And if you're an emotional England fan, Bradley, I'm sure that was quite the roller coaster for you.
I've seen God knows how many plays in my lifetime, and I've sat there stoically, seen the most heartbreaking moments. My face hasn't changed the entire way through. I went to go see Dear England a few months ago.
Yeah.
I actually was sat there and tears rolled down my face. I sort of silently like didn't move. I sort of like, you know, hoped that they would dry before the lights came up. But that happened.
Yeah.
My girlfriend has seen me cry once in our entire relationship. It was when England beat Germany in the Euros.
Brilliant. Could totally relate to that.
England as a nation are... certainly as a nation of supporters, I don't think we've done ourselves proud over the years, but I think Gareth Southgate's done a pretty remarkable job of trying to drag us from a bit of a dark place and just try and set a standard amongst us as supporters that I feel I maybe foolishly believe we can reach as a nation.
Well, talking of teams from the past in England, that leads us on to our first question. I wonder if this is going to be England related, but what's your sort of team of the gods, Bradley? Is there a particular era or team, international or club, anyone from the past that springs to mind?
So I've leaned on this because I've leaned on the idea of a season, the Arsenal season of 97-98. And for me, I was, by that stage in my life, I was in Shropshire, Staffordshire, Shropshire, and I was surrounded by a bunch of kids who had no reason to support Manchester United, and they were all United fans. Well, sorry, it was half and half. There was some Stoke City fans in there, and all of a sudden Arsenal were a team they were sort of talking about with a sort of fear and a defensiveness, and Arsenal just went on this bonkers run. We went sort of going to games in a way that we were like, oh, we're actually going to win today, and I hadn't really felt that since the naivety I had as a little child when I just assumed we would win. And then I started to have that realization through the early 90s, just kind of, you know, beaten out of me. And then all of a sudden we've got these players like, you know, Mark Overmars. We've got Petit and Vieira in the midfield. We've got the back four, the iconic back four. You've got Adams, Bold, Dixon, Winterburn. You've got the best Tash in the land in goal. And I remember going to the house of a Stoke fan, a friend of mine, and watching Arsenal play Manchester United at Old Trafford, somewhere where Arsenal do not do well, and just being amazed by us going there and winning this game. And
was that the Overmars goal?
It was the Overmars goal. And not only winning the game, but going into Old Trafford and looking like the best team. And I'd never really seen that before. I didn't know what it looked like. I'd never really properly felt it before. And then we won the league.
Stay one. You're a god. What are you going to do?
Number one, first and foremost, salary cap.
Yeah.
In terms of like the point of football or the point of teams, like, again, I've sort of mentioned myself as a cynic before. It is businesses versus businesses. The Champions League is capitalism on steroids. And fans are taken advantage of. At the same time as fans not being stupid, they can't help but just obey their passion for turning up at the stadiums every week and paying their money. The people in charge know this, and so they push their limits and they try out ideas like the Super League, like a Champions League that nobody can get into unless you are one of the big boys. So salary
like crypto.
Cap.
like crypto tokens, like, so that you can like buy your way tokens. Into a fan. Yeah.
Oh my god. the ick I get. I immediately think of John Terry telling everybody to invest in his crypto. It's like, John, come on. You are, you know, of all the people, have some self-awareness. The idea of football teams is that these teams are representing an area, and it helps if we are all taking pride in our area. The annoying thing about glory hunting fans is that you are from Basingstoke, you're from Leamington Spa, you're from the Isle of Man. You go, oh, okay, I haven't got a big team near me. I'm going to support Manchester United. I'm going to support whoever. And it's like, I want all those people out there to know, if you support Liverpool, Manchester United, if you're not from Salford, if you're not from Toxteth and you're supporting one of those teams, they might not say it to your face, but people look at you as though you are weak. You are a weak individual, because when you were growing up, you treasured that sensation of glory and winning, which you didn't earn. No one around you had anything to do with it. You treasured that more than taking pride in where you were from, in your ancestors, or even if you were, whatever, like your reason for being where you are, support your local team.
I'm sure you're aware of the glass house that you're sitting in. And I understand this now, why the sort of I'm England primarily has come to the fore.
I have to highlight this. Because
of course, if you're going to evict the Frenchman from your Arsenal team over its history, you might have a slightly different looking.
I would give that up in a heartbeat. I would give up all the history of that in a heartbeat. For me, teams should represent their area. Now, we're a bit beyond that because, you know, the horse has bolted. But if you introduce I'm introducing salary caps. I'm introducing England eligible players. You've got to have three on the field at any one time. I'm introducing a localized player. You have a perimeter for each club of however many. You probably have to do it by population. And however many people, you have to have at least one person from that area on your pitch at any one time. And that regulates it. It means you probably have to have about three or four of them in your squad. You're then promoting people from this local area. Salary cap. You're going to have a salary cap so that you give everybody a shot. Because if I'm a Crystal Palace fan, if I'm an Everton fan, if I'm maybe Aston Villa are just on that cusp, but what is the point of just knowing that you will never have a look at winning the league now unless, you know, some billionaire comes in, unless Elon Musk suddenly decides he wants to fund a football team and, you know, turn you into a machine of winners. Let's get this salary cap in, boys and girls. We all know it's not going to happen, but I'm now the football god and I've introduced it. And if Erling Haaland wants to play on the same team as Kevin De Bruyne, then one of them's going to have to take a pay cut.
I love it as a concept. And it speaks to what a lot of us are as a football fan, really. Like, as a Wolves fan, you know, we finished seventh twice in a row and reached the Europa League quarterfinals. And now, sort of a few years later, it's like the money and the effort it took to get there, it's probably not going to happen again. So what do we dream of, you know, as Wolves fans? And the vast majority of the country, what can they actually dream of? Because football is all about dreaming and hoping and believing in something.
Why should you, as a Wolves fan, have to settle for the fact that a quarter final in the Europa League is essentially like the height of what you are expected to be able to achieve? Like, you should be happy with that. Why should you, as a Wolves fan, be denied the opportunity to have a team? So for those who aren't aware of it, American sports have a salary cap, because if your team wins the Super Bowl, you might be able to keep a core of that team together. But a bunch of those players suddenly turn around and say, do you know what? I just was a reason for you winning the Super Bowl. I want a pay rise. The team they've got, the salary cap might have been already reached. So the team then has to let go of certain players. Meanwhile, other teams are then picking up these kind of free agents and they're improving. And there is a circulation. There's the wealth of talent moves around in such a way. It's not just you know, your teams from the North West and your teams from London who are winning. We just had the Kansas City Chiefs win the Super Bowl. It's not in LA, it's not in New York, it's not in Miami. Anyway, I haven't sold a salary cap to the nation. I'd need to formulate an argument a lot better than the one I just did. But if you would like to not see the Premier League basically become the Bundesliga or the Scottish League or Ligue 1, where we suddenly have Bayer Leverkusen top of the Bundesliga right now and everyone's losing their minds at how amazing it is, guess what? Next year, Bayern Munich will win the first of what will be another 5, 6, 7 titles, and it will go back to being the joke that it is. I don't think we want that. I think a salary cap would help us out there.
I think everyone who's listened to this podcast is applauding right now. That would be a very, very, very popular sentiment. No, it's a great idea. Right, question three for you, Bradley, is football perfection. Who is football imperfection for you?
The reason I've resisted going for Thierry Henry is because he was football imperfection. He could just decide to go and win a game when he wanted to. He was just that good. If you take him at his prime and he was in the mood, he'd go, "We're winning this game today. I don't care who we're playing." Boom. I've resisted this. And the reason being is because there was an impact that one particular player had on me when I was at an age where I was just starting to understand the game at a slightly different level. And I went to a game in about 95. I think we were playing Nottingham Forest. We weren't playing that well. And I think Bruce Rioch must have been the manager. And we're in the stand, and this big blonde piece of elegance suddenly turns, plays the ball between these two defenders, which goes to no one. And it kind of just rolls out of play. And a guy behind me stands up and he goes, "Oi, Burkamp, pull your finger out your ass. People want that shirt." And I remember sort of thinking, wow, like basically we just witnessed Dennis Burkamp turn up. He didn't really start very well at Arsenal, but that was because the team didn't really understand what he was doing. Burkamp just basically found this pass that kind of took two defenders out of the game. And if somebody had run onto it, we'd have basically scored the easiest goal ever. But when you don't have somebody running onto that type of ball, you look like an idiot. And I remember seeing Burkamp and just not specifically being able to sort of say why, but just know, I was like, wow, that is different. That is different to anything I've ever seen. And it was, I couldn't tell you why he was so good, but he was just completely different to anything I'd ever seen. I think we played Southampton or somebody, scored a couple goals and everyone went, oh, he is good. But before that, he was still doing all the stuff that he was then doing that everyone could see he was doing. It was just that as a team, the team just hadn't caught up with this guy who was just ridiculous. So because of the impact of seeing somebody for the first time as a kid and realizing what football could actually be, I have to say Dennis Burkamp.
Is this what kind of cemented you as an Arsenal fan, partly being able to?
No. I'd say Paul Merson kind of did that. Paul Merson, we signed Ian Wright in 91 as well. I remember being very excited about that because he'd had a cup final. I didn't really know who Ian Wright was, and then he scored a couple goals in a cup final, 1990. And I remember being very excited because, you know, Italian 90 was a big thing for me as a kid. Probably the difference between me kind of going, yay, football, my dad likes it, so I guess I do, and I enjoy kicking it about, to suddenly being like, oh my God, football. I am, this is my religion, football.
Yeah.
And I think that's adapted. The World Cup is now my religion. So I'm at the mercy of some pretty evil people.
So you mentioned the evil people. Is that who you're going to be next up sending to hell? Because that is your privilege as God.
I think, I mean, Infantino would go there straight away. What a plum he is. I think while he's there, Salt Bae can follow him through the door.
Smart.
We had this with Sepp Blatter, where if you put a man in power for as long as he was in a role where everybody who is around you is trying to please you in some way, you suddenly are living a lifestyle where you're flying from country to country, first class, staying in prime hotels, going to lovely restaurants, going to all these events and having everybody just, you know, behave around you a certain way. You are no longer thinking about the people and the game of football. You are thinking about your lifestyle and you are thinking about what is the best way to maintain this lifestyle. And you are therefore you are thinking about the people with money. Infantino turned up. He said all the right things at the beginning. And the message, broadly speaking, is I'm here for the people. And it happens immediately that he is there for the money and for the lifestyle. And if you want proof of this, all you need to do is watch any tournament game. And at some point, there'll be a lull in play and the camera will suddenly show you a shot of Infantino. And there's only one reason for this. It's because it's a PR stunt to get his face out there so that everyone goes, oh, look, he's at this game. He must be an important person. And it's to build, it's a sense of self. It's all for his own profile. It's very clear he has an ego. It's very clear he is the wrong person in this job. And
it's nice that fans have started to boo at that point, though, during some games.
And I hope they turn that up. Only at games, like let him walk down the street and be a normal person. But at games, when that happens, go wild. Go wild. This guy needs to be made aware of the negative impact that his soul is having on the game. While we're at it, any ceremonial garment that gets put on you whilst you are lifting a trophy, that can go to hell.
Yeah.
And this is my biggest, this is the first thing I'm banishing to hell. England wearing white shorts.
Of course. Yeah.
I appreciate there's an irrationality to this, but we are not Real Madrid. We are England. When we play at home and somebody's wearing like vaguely blue shorts, we go, oh no, don't worry. We'll wear our white shorts. No, kit man, I am banishing you to hell. Because you've allowed that, and we're now pretending to be Real Madrid. We're not Real Madrid. We're England. We wear blue shorts, and anytime we wear white shorts, anytime David Beckham goes on a documentary and goes, "Oh, I really liked it when we used to wear white shorts when we played for England."
Well,
white.
That's not a bad Beckham actually.
And I'm like, David, you are the problem here, David. I bless you, but you're the problem, and I'll let Leeds off. Because, you know, Yorkshire, White Road. But
ooh, what about Spurs? Spurs do it now and again. What do you reckon, Kate? Right or not?
Yeah, come on, Kate.
I'm not as...
Do you want to know why you're crap in Europe, Kate?
Yeah, you're right. Perhaps that... I suppose I should take a bit more responsibility for having less of a virulent view about this than you do, Bradley. I feel like perhaps if I dug down a bit more into this and, you know, had a word in the corridors of power, that would have had a bit more of an impact.
I just have a thing for iconography, and there is a stripping of that iconography when England wear all white. We should, you know, maintain that white shirt, blue shorts, white socks.
Bloody headband. Goes. Perfect.
And a bloody head. If you get one player a game with a bloody headband.
Amazing.
Yeah, fine. Okay, so we've wiped out quite a lot from the game here. I feel as though there's so much to dig into around the kind of people around football in terms of what you're talking about, because like you mentioned, lots of people within football, but lots of people within many different parts of very successful companies and organizations and whatever, they get treated like they're very special and they become kind of a bit corrupted and used to it, right? So I think, did you have an idea for who you would put in charge of football? Have you got
who's going to run football? Oh, obviously it's you at the moment, but you can put someone in place
from me. I think whilst I don't know intimately the people who would be in line for this job. What I would do is I would shorten the amount of terms you could do. In football, it's not regulated in a way where you're not breaking the law in the same way that life kind of would apply the law. There's so much more you can get away with to promote yourself, to promote your life, to improve your life, because football is kind of ungoverned by the world unless the FBI suddenly decide to step in and, you know, Platini Blatter yourself, or Platini Blatter people in power because of like extreme corruption. But there's a bar that you can push pretty high before anyone's going to investigate you and ruin your life. And I would just like to see some self-awareness from FIFA, where they turn around and go, okay, look, let's not give this much power to one person for such a prolonged period of time. Who that person to step in would to then want to do that job is, I'm sure they would present themselves.
Connor Cody, probably. He could do it.
You, Tim? How about you, Tim?
No, we're still Connor Cody.
Put Tim in charge.
No, absolutely not.
He can't even set up his lighting on his podcast, of course.
I'll get someone else to do it. It's fine. Yeah, self-awareness from FIFA. We might be waiting a while for that. But that's the present day. How about history, Bradley? We're going to get rid of something from your footballing life/history. A moment, if you will.
Okay, I've thought about this. I am getting rid of the moment where Steven Gerrard is selected for Liverpool's last game of the 2001-2002 season. They played Ipswich. They didn't need him. They won 5-0. And I say, Steven, I know it's the last game of the season. We're going to sit you out this one. You just enjoy the day. And the reason being is because that summer, England went to Korea, Japan, and they played Brazil in a quarterfinal that was actually probably, maybe I'm fantasizing this to a degree, but you've made me a football god, so I'm going to revel in that. The quarterfinal against Brazil, suddenly Gerrard is in that game. And I'm telling you now, we beat Brazil. It's a shock result, but we beat Brazil in the quarterfinal. Guess what then happens? We face Turkey in the semi-final. Turkey, forgive me, but you were lucky to get there, and we would have swept Turkey aside. Then we have a final against Germany. And I don't know, 9 months prior, we'd just gone to Munich and we'd beaten Germany 5-1. I'm not saying we would have beaten 5-1 again, but we would have beaten Germany in the 2002 World Cup final.
Emil Heskey scored. Listen to that on a previous episode of Football Guys.
Oh, very good cross-formation.
Yes.
Thank you, Bradley.
Yes, he did. And so as a result, if Steven Gerrard just chills out on the final day of the 2001-2002 season, we have him for the World Cup. We don't have to worry about sort of like making it work with Nicky Butt, Trevor Sinclair, and we win the World Cup in 2002.
I actually hate this. I love it, but I also hate this because I am now sitting here feeling quite sad about the 2002 World Cup.
Get over it, Kate. It's been 22 years.
The problem is, if you go through a lot of our tournaments, there's so many sliding doors moments, and I'm sure every nation has these sliding doors moments, but like, if you look at, go back to 86, and there's the obvious sort of like red card for Maradona, or Gary Lineker throwing his body at that header at the end. If you go to Italia 90, I mean, that semi-final, penalties, whatever. If you go to Euro 96, if Gazza was just wearing longer studs. So many tournaments have sliding doors moments, but the one that I think is most prevalent to us winning another World Cup is that game against Brazil because of the games afterwards. And I would have been about 17, 18. And winning a World Cup at 17, 18, I mean, maybe it would have ruined football for me, and that's why it didn't happen. But equally, like, the joy I would have experienced you know, would have set a high bar for the rest of my life to try and keep meeting that bar. Maybe I'd have succeeded in more areas of my life as I tried to recreate that euphoria that I experienced.
Oh, blimey. Yeah.
Yeah. There's many questions I could ask.
Or maybe not. Maybe you would have just gone on a rampage and never been able to achieve anything because you would have just thought life comes easy and England always win World Cups and that's life. So, yeah. The reason this is such a painful exercise is because most of the time I think, oh, these sliding doors moments, like this is the nature of football and you have to just cope with it and everyone has them. But of course, when you itemize them in this way, Bradley.
Well, like, we just had a Euros where it's come down to a penalty shootout. We just had a World Cup where...
Which I was convinced.
Yeah, I was... The World Cup that we've had. Like, it, you know, if I've got this theory about James Ward-Prowse being in the England squad for the last World Cup, because Harry could have quite easily turned around to JWP and said, hey James, you never miss penalties.
Yeah,
I've just taken one already.
Or Ivan Toney as well, yeah. Definitely.
Ivan Toney, the free. We even had a free kick towards the end, which Marcus Rashford is not a free kick taker, but he's taken a couple that have like just rifled into the back of the net. But he's not consistent. We had a free kick at the end, and again, I was going, I'm not sure he'd necessarily be one of our best central midfielders, but if James Ward-Prowse is on the pitch right now, like, yeah, you have him there just to try and make this moment. World Cup 98, Rob Lee, let him stay at home. Get Gascoigne in the squad, because at some point you're going to have a game where if you get Gazza on for the last 10 minutes, something's going to happen. I know he's going to trash his hotel room 6 out of the 7 nights of the week. I know he's going to be hammered when he walks onto that pitch, but he can make something happen anyway.
So we're going to get you to banish one thing from football, unless you built that into your previous answer. Or do you have one specific thing you want to... get rid.
With regards to what I will be banishing, we have an example. Kate is well aware of my very over-the-top fantasy football league, Tim. It's a very intense affair. One of the things that happens is we've actually already banished a player. And we had a moment where basically if you selected this player to your... We do like a draft system, so no one can have the same player. There's this one particular player that if you draft him, you have to pay a fine of £200. And the reason being is because it was a player called Ramiro Funes Mori, who was at Everton.
Right.
And we basically imposed a ban on anyone picking this guy up. And the reason being is because we watched, there was a game where Everton played Liverpool and Funes Mori put a tackle in on Divock Origi that was a sort of Derby Day challenge. Basically, it was actively somebody trying to, you know, hurt someone in a way that just, you know, come on, let's be sportsmen here. It could have been a career ender. Now, that in itself, those happen all the time, but what Funes Mori then did is he got up. He knew he'd been sent off. He got up and then he grabbed the badge, the Everton badge. He sort of kissed it and turned to the away fans and was like, yeah. Even the Everton fans were looking at him in a way that's kind of like, I don't know about that, mate. So Ramiro Funes Mori walked off the pitch that day, and we as a unit, we're known as Are You Having a Draft? We as a unit, We decided from that day forth he would no longer ever be a part of Are You Having a Draft ever again. And that's who we banished. That aside, punditry standards are very low, and I would banish any pundit who says, oh, yeah, well, only time will tell. Or, oh, well, let's see. Any pundit who does not give a definitive prediction of what will happen with a player, with a game. Matthew Upson, how well do you think this new signing is going to do for West Ham? Oh, well, only time will tell. Audio listeners, I'm pointing at the camera as though Matthew Upson is in front of me, and I'm pointing with gritted teeth as I say, Matthew, we don't need that. We need a better standard of football punditry. Put your neck on the line. Anyway,
funny enough, actually, we've got him in the waiting room for you.
Good.
Now.
Bring him out here. Bring him out here.
You don't often hear people go for Upson. That's quite a niche one. But we love it. You know, we love it. We get a lot of similar answers on this show. You get Messi a lot. You get VAR a lot, and that's great. But we like these avenues, these cul-de-sacs of nicheness that you're going down. This is great. Right, we're going to move on to... I don't think anyone knows what to expect here. I certainly don't. We're going to move on to food, Bradley. So in terms of your godly food, your food of the gods, something you might associate with football when you're eating, what on earth might that be?
Well, I want to improve the football experience here because I'm not much of a eater when I go to a football game. I'm there observing the play, the patterns, the, you know, the performance, the pageantry. I enjoy football enough that I don't need to insert some sort of sensoric resonance in my mouth. Make of that what you will.
I don't even know what these words mean.
Get your dictionary out, Mason. Come on.
Right, hang on.
So
we're going to have footnotes on this bloody podcast.
whilst you have your dictionary out, Kate, I want you to look up the word tailgating. Now,
More American stuff.
Yeah, so if you ever go to an NFL game, so for those listening who don't know, I grew up in America as part of, I grew up in a bunch of places, and America was one of them, and I was introduced to tailgating. And it's basically where they have these huge car parks outside the front of stadiums. We obviously don't have the option quite the same way, but I'm the football god, so I'm making it a thing. And people turn up in their RVs, they turn up in their pickup trucks, and they just have, like, people whip out a barbecue, people have coolers full of beers, and, like, there's just this kind of festival of what we would call a picnic going on before the game. There's, you know, people are dressing up like it's a sports Halloween. There is an atmosphere outside the game, and you can just bowl up to somebody you've never met before and they'll serve you up a hot dog. There's just this atmosphere in the car park beforehand where you can fill your boots.
Okay. So it's more about the excitement of it and the localness of what you're picking. You're not going to say, I'm going to enforce all of these cars to be serving me just X, Y, Z.
I think the difference we have is that obviously the culture here is that when you go into a game, everyone pours into the pubs and, you know, sort of gets hammered. And the difference with tailgating is it's just a slightly friendlier atmosphere. Not that we need to, you know, sort of soften up crowds, but there is a lot of enjoyment to having tailgating that you don't necessarily get if you're just turning up and having three pints before you go to a game every other Saturday. The atmosphere, by the time all these people then get into the ground as well, that's the element to it, because everyone's just, like, you know, building up, talking about the game and excited and seeing the energy of all the people, and then they take that into the stadium. They're not sort of taking, like, beer fumes. They're taking, like, this positive energy for the spectacle they're about to observe. Maybe I'm overthinking this, but I'm the football god, so...
I definitely empathise with that, because what I want to be is not hungry when I'm going to a game of football, and quite often that, because I get, you know, more tense. So I definitely agree with you that it would be good to be fed up and full of good chat. Fed up? Wrong phrase. You know what I mean?
We've been to a game together where, like, essentially, I mean, it was an England game as well that we last went to, where I'm not even sure if I said too much apart from just letting out the release of us scoring.
Yeah.
And it was England Croatia in the Euros, and the release of that. But in between those moments, I'm just sort of like, I'm focused on that game. I don't need to be chowing down on a burger, which I'm going to regret in an hour's time anyway.
Or spill it on yourself as well, or just spill it everywhere. Yeah, completely agreed. So apart from clearly me in this scenario, you get to now pick who you would be watching for in an ideal world as football god. Who are you choosing to watch the football with?
Okay, so if it's an England game, then I'm taking the regiment. And that is, I say to the regiment, I wish I was there. It's the Shire boys who I went to high school with. The Shire boys I'm taking to an England game. Kate, come along as well while you're at it. But I'm taking the Shire boys to an England game because they are hilarious and it would be an enjoyable moment. However, if we're talking Premier League, we're talking the last game week of the season. We're going to go watch the game of the team, the matchup that has the most players involved in my fantasy football league. And I am taking the draft boys with me. And the reason being is because on the last day of the season, it is the final of our cup competition. The trophy of which we play for is called the Mason.
No way. Named
it
after?
Is called, named after a Sky Sports presenter.
Brilliant.
Called Kate Mason. We have two trophies. We've got, well, we've got a few trophies, but the two main ones are the league and the cup. And the league is named the Abdo and the cup is called the Mason. Yeah, we play the cup final is between two drafters who have reached the final. And I'm taking the draft boys to a Premier League game on the final day of the season because the league gets decided, the cup gets decided, and we usually meet up at a sports bar and watch multi-screens at the same time. And whoever's kind of involved in the cup final has usually got their head on a swivel and it's just sort of doing that, trying to work out, you know, where they're getting points from. And it's a very enjoyable day. It would be a more enjoyable day if we were actually at one of these games all together.
Well, we're painting a lovely picture here, and now we need to hear something. So, yeah, what kind of song do you really associate and cherish when it comes to football, Bradley?
Okay, Tim, I want to tell you about a moment in my life which I want to transfer. I want to transfer the creativity of it to football. So the year is 2015. I've just been to watch England play Australia in the Rugby World Cup. And it was a home World Cup. We were bloody awful. And Australia thumped us, basically, in our own backyard. We poured out Twickenham and I'm surrounded by just row upon row of beleaguered, depressed England fans. Like such was the hiding we'd just been given. And then there were these four Aussies, a few rows, just kind of like a few feet ahead of us, walk into the train station. And they start singing, "You and I belong together." And then the other three go, "Ooh, never felt such emotion. Ooh, no matter where we are." I can't believe I'm singing on audio. This is being recorded.
This is fantastic.
And basically, they start singing the theme tune to Home and Away. And by all these miserable England fans are, they start kind of like chuckling and what have you. And by the time that these four guys get to, they're like, "Hold me in your arms, don't let me go. I want to stay forever." And by the time they go, "Closer each day," and the entirety of anyone who was in the sort of like audio space that can hear them, every England fan goes, "Home and Away," and it cheered everybody up. The vibe going into that station from that point, and I've never had such a turnaround in sports where I've just suddenly been like lifted by, like, it was depressing seeing us get pummeled, but these guys managed to lift the spirits of all these people losing. Now, if you could transfer that vibe so that you had a song at a football game that just kind of got, you know, two sides together feeling good about themselves, I would do that.
It's time for the last question. Here we go. You get to choose a game, Bradley, that's going to last forever. What is it going to be?
This is a bonkers question.
Yes, for many reasons.
Who wants to go to a football game that lasts?
Because there's no
forever?
Outcome. There can be no outcome. You're absolutely right. So you'll take it in whatever direction you want to go.
The direction I've taken it is, I'm going to have to assume that the euphoric feeling of this game will just somehow maintain through my soul. Euro 96, there was a mind-blowing moment where we're suddenly scoring loads of goals against the Dutch. And it's England versus Holland, Shearer and Sheringham. The Holland team of the late 80s, I mean, they won a Euros. And as a result of that, there was this kind of enigma around them. The Dutch were kind of spoken about in such crazy terms as this sort of like freakish nation of about 12 people, and yet 11 of them were incredible at football. And we play the Dutch, and all of a sudden goals are just flying in the back of the net in a way that I can't really remember happening in an England game that I had watched up until that point, where we were just so on top of one of the big teams. We score four goals past them. It's a sunny day at Wembley. England are wearing blue shorts. I was at my grandmother's watching this game, and the shock every time a goal went in. I have a feeling this game going on forever. I'm not sure how much that shock would actually exist. I'm also not at 11, 12, whatever I was. So admittedly, goals going in has a different effect on me nowadays. But if I can recapture that feeling of those goals going in against Holland in 96, then let's make that last forever.
It's interesting how, as sort of England followers and fans, we revere like 96 and 98. And I do absolutely as well. And you can just imagine the Germans and the Brazilians looking at us like, guys, do you know what I mean? But that, I guess that's how starved of success we are, right? That these semis and quarterfinals or whatever, we remember them so fondly. It's sad, isn't it? We've got to win something soon. Bloody hell.
It's so sad because Germans, the sensation of winning a tournament for them is, it's like, you know, we all, every nation has a club that wins a lot, and their fans are just like numb to the experience. And Germans are the international version of that. Like, even when they have a bad tournament, they're like, it's fine. We'll be good in maybe 4-8 years. It's fine. Like, they're just so, they're not very good at the moment, and yet they're super chill about it. Because they won a World Cup they won a World Cup 10 years ago. They'll probably win one of the next three. They just are blasé about it. We have won one when most of us weren't alive. And since then, we've won Le Tournoi. And I do not want to... A decent tournament. We lost to Brazil. We didn't even win all our games. We lost to Brazil. And if I go through my career as a supporter of England, and the one thing we come away with is Le Tournoi, I'll be disappointed. There'll be a severe level of disappointment given the resources, the energy. You guys are doing a podcast about where people get to imagine what they want in football. The amount of time that our thoughts, the amount of thought time put into football in this country, for us to have won one World Cup,
yes,
58 years ago, what I wouldn't give for Steven Gerrard to have missed that game against Ipswich.
That was it. That was the moment.
That was the one. That was the one.
That was the moment. What a set of answers we've had here. We've been down avenues we have never been down before and may never go down again, quite frankly. And I'm all here for it. So, Bradley, we're going to take your 10 answers and turn them. They're going to carve them in stone for your 10 commandments.
The football gods!
Your glory team, Bradley, was Arsenal, 97-98. Great team. Your first godly act is going to be to introduce a salary cap, and you'd also like some local players in some local teams for local people. And we're going to go... football perfection for you is Dennis Bergkamp. You're going to damn Gianni Infantino to hell. I want also England wearing white shorts. Not a fan of that either. And the moment you're going to wipe from history, you've just referenced it, was Steven Gerrard being chosen for Liverpool against Ipswich in May 2002. Over to you, Kate.
Banishing from football with an honourable mention for bland punditry, Ramiro Funes Mori is gone. Godly food is not specific to the food, it's more like the environs of tailgating. You're going to be there sitting out there taking burgers or hot dogs or whatever the, I don't know if that would be local to, for example, a game at Ipswich, but you know what I mean.
Taking food from random strangers, yes.
Taking food from random strangers, perfect. You'll be watching the England game, would be watched with the Shire boys you went to school with. The Draft boys will be watching like the final game of the season all together, figuring out who's going to win. Mason.
Can't even say your own last name. You even got embarrassed of saying your own last name.
There's a tiny bit on the embarrassing side. The song will be the, and again, this is more like a vibe, but the moment in which you heard the Home and Away theme song sung by a bunch of Aussie fans at a rugby game, that's going to be somehow superimposed into this football environment. And the euphoric feeling of the England beating the Netherlands in Euro 96, 4-1, that's going to be the one that lasts forever, in whatever form that will take.
I'm going to make one adjustment to that list.
Please.
So it's specifically, because in 1996 you could say this, and it was a significantly better name than you use now. You could say it was England versus Holland.
That's a fair correction. Done.
Admittedly, I said old.
Brilliant stuff.
The Football Gods is a Voicework Sport production.
Sports Social Podcast Network.